Well, good morning. Welcome to the Mark Kreslin Show here on the Veritas Radio Network, the Crusade Channel, live Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Central Time to 8 a.m. Central Time, followed by my good friend Mike Church. The Mike Church Show is a live show. You can also call us and get on the air. Today's going to be a particularly interesting show. I'll explain in a moment. You may want to get ready to call in with questions or comments as we deal with a very important topic in front of us. And if you choose to do so, you can call us at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. And Christopher in the Louisiana studio will pick up your phone call, and he'll put you in the queue to get you on the air. I want to also remind everybody a little bit more. I want to remind everybody to please consider becoming a Founders Pass member today. Don't put it off. We're ending the end of the month, or nearing the end of the month, and we could sure use your help. This is how we expand the network, folks. This is how we talk about topics that you won't hear on mainstream talk media. Mike calls them the mainstream talk mafia. I think there's some truth to that. But you won't hear that kind of radio there that you're going to hear here today. So in order to make this happen, we need you to become a Founders Pass member, and please don't put it off. If you can, do so today. I'm over on the VeritasRadioNetwork.com website. Pretty cool looking website, guys. This thing continues to develop and grow. There are more features there. We have a little pop-up there this morning that makes it even easier for you to become a member of the Crusade marketing team. All you need to do is click on one of those buttons and start sharing our posts and our radio shows with your friends and family, and that will help us get this network out to more people. We're seeing our numbers continue to track up, and it's because of you guys out there doing your job as part of the Crusade marketing team. Appreciate your effort there. But if you go there, you can see how easy it is to join. Just click on the join button, and voila, you are given an option to join, and you are an official Founders Pass member. Thank you to everybody who has become one already. Well, I brought up the news this morning, as I do every morning before the show, and I saw this headline on Business Insider: power rationing has officially hit Venezuela. And this is the article. It says this: fridges zapped off in kitchens across Venezuela as the government, get the word government there, turned off the electricity supply to help ease a power shortage that is worsening the country's economic crisis. How appropriate for this article to be the headline news on Business Insider today, in light of the conversation we're going to have this morning about economics, our economy, and what the government may do to us someday. Don't miss that term in there. I'll read it again, that word in there. Fridges zapped off in kitchens across Venezuela as the government turned off the electricity supply to help ease a power shortage. When you empower one of these monstrosities that similar to the one we have in Washington, D.C., to control vast parts of an economy and a large portion of your life, they can turn on you, and it could very easily read, fridges zapped off in the kitchens across these United States as the federal government turned off the electricity supply. This is what happens when governments run everything. They screw things up. It's not a good idea for them to be providing all of these services and having the control over the power switch. After decades of socialist-type leadership down there by the government of Venezuela, guess what? There's a little picture accompanying this article with a little girl doing her homework under candlelight. Oh, yay. That's worked out real well. Well, how about we stop letting the government control everything? Gosh, we are just so accustomed here, especially in these United States, because of a nostalgic view of history and the founding era and all the great events that have happened throughout our history, to believe those all happened because of our great government and that our great government will take care of us going forward. Well, stop thinking that way. Here in Oklahoma today, we're going to have a pretty big outbreak of tornadoes, it appears. There are some areas in Oklahoma that have a very high likelihood of some substantial tornadoes roaming across the state. And I can assure you, having been with these folks now for a few years, most of them are not hoping the government is right there to take care of us if one blazes through a city or a town. No, they have learned to take care of themselves. I saw this firsthand when the big tornado hit Moore. People were not down there crying out, oh, where's the government? They were down there helping one another. 1,300 homes were obliterated, many, many deaths. But the people were down there taking care of themselves. They were taking care of their neighbors. They were running into the where the tornado had just come through. My wife and I were chasing that tornado that day. We saw the destruction occur. And people were running to the problem. And it wasn't just first responders. It was the average citizens. Some left the Warren Theater down there, which is a big movie theater, and they got out in the parking lot and began, right behind it is a housing development that got wiped out, literally wiped out. I mean, this is surreal when you drive through there. The houses are gone. And rather than stay sheltered in their, in the Warren Theater, they ran out and started helping people. It was the first responders, but it was also the average citizen. Heaven help us if we get like the Venezuelans, yet there are parts of this country that are just like the Venezuelans, who are now going to turn to government to turn the power back on. How about we just don't have the government have that kind of power, so that it doesn't show up someday reading fridges zapped off in kitchens across Venezuela, across the United States, as the federal government turned off the electricity supply. How about we don't ever get ourselves in a position where that might be the opening paragraph of this report? I feel for the people down there, but you know what? They brought it on themselves. When you adopt the socialist mentality and you think the government's going to provide all this and that for you, well, you know what? When the government can't, it starts turning power off. In that regard, in regards to this article, let's go right to the phone lines here and talk to my good friend, Scott Strelzik. Scott Strelzik was the executive producer of the Forgotten Men radio show, the radio show I really got my radio career start back in Maryland with. It was Joshua, myself, and Scott. As you might remember, last Friday we did a reuniting kind of show, and we had Scott on, we had Joshua on, and we did a Forgotten Men show last Friday. We'll be doing more of those in the future. But Scott played a particularly important role on the show. Scott is a software engineer. Scott, what's your title exactly? What's your at Marriott there? You're a software engineer.
I'm at Marriott. So, it is jack of all trades, master of none. I do a lot of, Oracle ERP work and capacity planning, performance management work for various, clients all over the country. So,
but we figured out very quickly, Scott had this analytical mind and this kind of engineering attitude, trying to solve complex problems that neither Joshua nor I could solve, especially as it related to the economy and economics and gold and fiat currency and money and how money works. And it's always been a treat to have Scott talk about these elements of our lives, because as much as, you know, right now things appear to be going smooth, the economy turning south would have considerable implications for every one of us. And so as complicated as a topic as this is to discuss, I think it's really important that we have this discussion. And so I invited Scott on, who has a very good grasp of these ideas, to come on and talk to us about these issues so that we don't end up like Venezuela. Scott, how wild is it that Venezuela, this was the headline article on Business Insider this morning, they're down there shutting off power.
Yeah, I saw that. And it's interesting. I think if you and I lived there, it would be good for us because, you know, then we could lose some weight and all that. You know, there is some silver lining and everything, so to speak.
I guess.
But yeah, think about it. It's crazy, even in the history of mankind, because electricity, obviously, is a relatively newfound thing. The government never could control what you did in your own home, right? I mean, they couldn't control if you had kerosene or, well, they did. To some degree, but kerosene heaters or whether you had candles or whatever. But now, because there's this thing called electricity, all of a sudden they get this omnipotent power over regulating it and telling people when they can have it and can't have it. It's absolutely absurd.
It really is absurd, and it's stunning. And I don't think it would be an impossible idea to embrace that someday that article could read, the federal government has turned off the electricity supply. And I think this is why it's important to talk about the issue of economics and the economy. And so, Scott, just to lay the groundwork for what is going to be a detailed discussion this morning on these issues, bring us up to speed. Why is this an important discussion today? I think sometimes, Scott, we resist this conversation because it is complicated. It deals with terms we're not familiar with. And so, nevertheless, as we see in Venezuela, as that whole society collapses because the government controlled the economy, explain to us why this is an important discussion today and where did this problem really originate that brings us to the need to have this conversation today?
Well, so I would start with the fact that you and I, Joshua, we had epiphanies, right? As we often said, I think the concept of money and banking and the economy and so forth, I had certain epiphanies over time as well. And that was, I didn't really understand the history of it and so forth. I just took it for what it was and what most people do, right? We're used to what we have. So normalcy bias plays into this as well. A lack of understanding of money, and I'm going to get into that and explain that, and certain concepts moving forward. But it's funny because the way you started the show with what's happening in Venezuela, in my head I was like, oh, you know what? I might just pivot to a different way of approaching this, at least at the beginning. And that has to do with political and economic interest is how I want to start off. Henry Hazlitt, who is a well-known economist, said the art of economics consists of looking not merely at the immediate, but at the longer effect of any act or policy. It consists in tracing the consequences of that policy, not merely for one group, but for all groups. Mm-hmm. Now, let's contrast that with the art of politics, when applied to economic interests, consists of looking at the immediate effects
yep.
of any act or policy, and in tracing the consequences of that policy for one group, while ignoring the effect on all the others. Yep. So there's a very clear distinction between economic interest and political interest. And if you, the reason why this is important in context of how you started the show is when they converge into a single interest, you end up getting government interference in economic issues, right?
Yes.
The merging of political and economic interests creates disturbances in free markets. Whenever government enacts a program or a policy with economic implications, the political consequences are calculated based on the effect of a constituency group, a donor, or business interest.
Right.
A policy, a program could be sold under the guise of economic benefit to society, but the real intent is to secure political benefit. So the problem is, in my mind, is the convergence of economic and political interests together, where they, the ruling class, the politicians, have political goals in mind, and they sell them to us under some type of economic benefit. In the end, they just intrude more and more into our lives. So why should they decide who the winners and losers are in the economy. Why should they pass tax laws that favor certain businesses or industries? They pass wage and price control laws. They create public work programs. They enact regulations that restrict our activities and promote other activities. They pass laws dictating what products you can buy, like light bulbs or toilets or shower heads, and what products you cannot buy. They force compliance through hundreds of thousands of laws and millions of regulations. And non-compliance with them means fines, penalties, or prison. So I think we need the best thing for us is, in a long-term sense, is to separate the political and economic interest. Because if you took the economic interest out of politics, it leaves very little in politics. It leaves very little.
So, let's back up a little bit here. And do you think this is how it's always been in these United States, where the political and economic interests have been combined and then orchestrated ultimately through the quote-unquote national government?
Well, I would say to different degrees. And in fact, we've discussed this many times when we look at the Articles of Confederation and why they were replaced with the Constitution. And one of the major issues around that was issues around commerce and trade and also currencies. So to some degree, right? But the idea under the Constitution is to regulate commerce, right? Yeah. And to regulate commerce in how it was meant back when the Constitution was ratified means to make it regular, not to regulate it and control it and manipulate it and twist it and turn it into your own utopian view of what you think that may be. It is to leave people alone to be free to trade. It's to ensure that states did not erect barriers prohibiting trade from people in one state versus another state. So the whole idea of regulating commerce was strictly around ensuring that commerce flowed, not to regulate it, to prohibit it, control it, receive political benefits, and so forth. But yeah, it has been going on, just to different degrees. But when we get into the concept of money here and talking about money, which is where we really want to go in the economy,
yes,
they have control over that too. And its control is invasive to a degree that you could say it impacts you, your livelihood, it impacts your economic and personal freedom. It impacts everything you do in your life. So just as they can control electricity, they can control you quite a bit through this concept of money and interest rates and other things. So, so because of how you opened the show, I just wanted to pivot to that for a moment. But I do want to come back. I know you had a number of things that we were going back and forth with on topics today.
Yeah, and I want to get to these because, you know, you just made a big statement that, you know, about the government controlling things and how much it really does control our lives through money supply, how money is used. And I want to just start with a question. Is this the way it has to be? Is government the only entity that can control money supply, currency, so that trade can happen between me and my grocery store, or me and my plumber, or me and my used car dealer, or my new car dealer? Is the only way to enable trade from Mark Kreslin's to Bulldog Kia is through a U.S. dollar or a government-authorized money?
So the answer to that is unequivocally no. You don't need them at all, in fact. There may be some role for that, especially when it comes to foreign commerce and, trade balances and stuff like that. But for our day-to-day living in the real economy, the answer is really no. And it's I think the best starting point here is to talk about money and what is money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm just going to throw some things out here because I want the listeners to open their minds, cast aside what we think we know about money. And I was one of these people, right? I thought of money as these pieces of paper that you carry around, and money is wealth and all this other stuff. But what really is money? Is gold money? Is silver money? Is money whatever the government says it is? Are treasury bonds money? Is money only the monetary base? Is money the credit or claims on the base money? Is it tangible? Is it a common unit that reflects the relative value of things? Is it a medium of exchange? Is it the unit of account that medium of exchange reference for value? Should the unit of account also be the medium of exchange? What about store of value or wealth? If so, for how long? Over what period of time? Does money equate to wealth? And are those terms interchangeable? So even putting those questions out there and thoughts out there for people, well, should open your mind to, well, money is this idea, right? It's this thing that's been around for a while, not forever. It is made up, and the term money came into existence 800 or so years ago. But prior to that, the term money never existed in the vocabulary. Huh. But money, the way we think of it today, most people, and I think you would agree, are these little pieces of paper, right?
Yes,
they're ones,
right.
They're ones, they're fives, they're tens, they're twenties, et cetera. They're these little pieces of paper. So if that's money, we have to really think through, what does that really mean? So money, in my mind, is a concept. It's not even a real thing. It's a concept. It's an idea. And that idea is that man made up this term to apply it to some unit of tradable wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to, if you can ignore the fact that money ever existed, what people generally did was trade, right? And they traded their wealth assets. They traded gold. They traded, for food. They traded for plows and horses and cows and anything else of wealth. So they would trade one wealth item for another wealth item.
But Scott, let me stop real quick there. Let me stop real quick and interject. But doesn't that necessitate that both parties would agree that whatever it is you're trading has value? So in other words, if I have gold, but my neighbor who I want to buy a cow from doesn't value gold, then how can I make that trade happen?
Well, that is 100% true. And in fact, all trades, all exchanges between two people have to, one, be voluntary, and two, they both determine on their own that it's mutually beneficial to them, right? So what you may value in one sense may be much higher, for one item, may be much higher than what I value for that same item. And I would be willing to trade my hat for your, ham, right? I'm willing to do that, and we enter voluntarily, and the transaction completes. And that's exactly how barter works, right? But money is a concept, right? It was applied to this idea of trading wealth. So if you start at the basis of barter, which is what, how society or how mankind really traded, they have all these items. I mean, they have all these different items they create, and they trade them. So they want to trade their plow for a horse. They want to trade apples for bread. They want to trade whatever. So money is really a concept that gets applied to this unit of tradable wealth, okay? And I'm going to get into this a little more, and it gets a little, it is conceptual and abstract to start with, but it's going to make sense.
Good.
Historically, that's been gold because it's been the most valuable tradable wealth item, but it could be anything. Anything could truly function as money. The idea today with money is that they take this, they're trying to duplicate the idea of tradable wealth, like gold and other items, into forms, and they want to call it money and apply it, okay? So when you and I, Mark, if we trade wealth for wealth, one item, I mean, we can call food wealth, it has a short-term life, but it can be a form of wealth. I sell you a basket of bread, and you sell me a bushel of apples. I traded my wealth item, bread, for your wealth item, apples. They have obviously have a certain shelf life.
Scott, let me ask you a question here real quick. But couldn't my labor also be a tradable wealth?
Sure.
I mean, I could say, Scott, I'll go pick your potatoes if you'll give me a bushel of them when I leave.
Sure, it could be. But I think for this concept, we don't even have to go there.
Okay.
But yes, your services are your labor, absolutely. And as this develops over the show, this will get reinforced, but just give me a moment. Let me finish the thought. So when we make that trade of bread for apples, our transaction is complete. There is no counterparty risk, right? There is nobody else owes you anything for that. Nobody else owes me anything for that. The way that it works today, if I were to buy a bushel of apples from you you get basically money, which is a paper contract to pay you later. You then have that money to take at some later time and choose how to use that to buy something of value for it. Money is an intermediate part of the transaction. So the transaction is never complete, and you are owed some good or service at a future time by somebody else, mm-hmm. right? So it's different than barter in that sense. It doesn't, yes. The trade isn't complete, and we're trading in what the government calls money, or Federal Reserve notes in our case. And a note, if you look up the definition of it, is a debt instrument. So we're trading debt money instead of tradable wealth assets. So it's really a concept. Money is more of a concept that they apply, and typically that's applied to gold. What governments do over time is they slowly move you away from gold to gold certificates to other things, and then eventually remove the entire backing of the money supply by anything of intrinsic value. And by doing so, they create what's called a fiat currency by decree. The government decrees money as legal tender. So because they put their stamp of approval on it, it now becomes this magical thing, out there. It really is nothing else than a way to apply a concept to tradable wealth. That's the whole idea behind money. So I don't know if that is, for you, Mark, if that's a good definition or a good way to look at money.
Yeah,
but money is not a real thing, right? It's really not a real thing. It's a piece of paper. It's not a real thing. It's a concept that gets applied to a real thing. Even with gold coins, right? When gold was money, base money, they would take gold bullion, melt it down, and put some government stamp on it to say, okay, now it's money. So they monetize gold in that respect. But it's their stamp saying, okay, gold is money now instead of this piece of paper. The piece of paper itself has no true value to it. There is no intrinsic value to it. So if you have $1 million today, Mark, does it mean anything in terms of referencing units of accounts? And we're going to talk about this in a moment. It does mean something, but you have no you have no real wealth there. Your wealth is the fact that you can take that money and go buy things of value. It's not the money itself. It's what you can do with the money. It's the purchasing power of that, not the money itself. And so the uber rich, the really, really wealthy people out there, think about this. How do they preserve their wealth assets? They don't do it in currency. They don't do it in fiat currency. They buy things of value.
Right.
So they would go out and buy a Picasso or a Van Gogh. And they would buy cars and wine and real estate and mansions and all yachts and all kinds of other things. And that's because those things have value, and we are able to store that value.
Tangible.
Go ahead.
And they're tangible. They're something you can see and hear and feel and look
absolutely.
At.
And that's a very critical concept to this idea of wealth, right? So the difference between money and wealth is actually a tangible thing. And not only tangible, it's wealth because somebody can possess it, right? So the way wealth is often preserved is by the things that you possess. And historically, that has always been it. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with the things that you possess that could then be tradable with somebody else. So
you know,
that Van Gogh that's worth $50 million, because we reference things in dollars, it's worth something because there are others out there that, one, know you possess it, and two, there are others that could buy that if they want to preserve their wealth in a way other than sitting around in dollars. So
this is fascinating because
that's why art always trades, right? Because
yes.
And it's funny because, you know, if you look at art, you know, and the auctions and the prices for art, especially, you know, very rare pieces, you will find they always retain their value, essentially, up and down, because it's other people who have wealth that want to trade to preserve that wealth. They know it's there, they know they can possess it, and they know they can always trade it.
Yeah, this is kind of completely different thinking than I think how average people look at money. They look at that as wealth, not the assets that the money, the concept of money, can purchase. And I think this is where we get a little bit hung up on on money, money supply, why it's important for us to consider whether government should be the final determiner of what money is. Because you're right, you keep using a term, tradable wealth. We all have tradable wealth. We all have some kind of tradable wealth, whether it's an actual asset, right? A car or a piece of property or a boat. Or we have labor that we can sell. We have knowledge that is a wealth asset we all possess, and rather it's very tricky how we have gone from seeing ourselves as a repository of wealth to that piece of paper we have in our wallet as wealth.
Right, and that concept is you have to grasp this, because as we move on and talk about the U.S., the government, and the Fed, and the gold standard versus Bretton Woods versus the breaking of Bretton Woods, and what that means, you have to start to understand these concepts. So the last piece I want to add about money is, today, I'm going to describe what I believe the functions of money are today. And it's really three things. And this is nothing new. I don't think I'm saying anything new here. Many others have said this. The first thing it does is it's a unit of account, or it's a unique unit. It's a way to express the amount of value of something. So, for instance, in the barter world, imagine in the barter world, there is no money and everybody trades. In your mind, you make these mental associations of value, right? Five chickens equal one goat, and two goats equal one cow. And one cow equals, 100 bushels of apples, and so forth and so on, right? In barter, all those associations are in your mind. So money becomes a unit of account, or a unique unit in the sense of it is a way to express the value of something or the amount of something. So it's a unit of account. That is one thing. Secondly, it's a medium of exchange. So this is something that represents the unit of account, and it's used to facilitate trade. And we all know what that is, right? We go out, we sell something, we get money, we then take that money, we buy something else. The medium of exchange does help, and there are good things that come from it, does help to facilitate trade amongst people. Because in barter, the issues that you run into are obviously the coincidence of wants and also divisibility of goods. So medium of exchange is actually a good thing. I don't have any real problem with that concept and of using something in that sense to facilitate exchange. And then the last piece, and this is probably the most important piece that we're going to get into throughout the show, and that's store of value. And store of value refers to the purchasing power of money, not the money itself. So a physical dollar bill, the thing that you hold in your hand, has no value in and of itself. It's just a thing. Its only value is that it can be used to obtain something of value. So store of value also has time horizon. Does the purchasing power of that thing change over time? Does it change from today to tomorrow, year over year, or from today over, let's say, a lifetime, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, whatever that time frame may be? So these are some ideas we need to talk about. The easy money, what we call the easy money camp, which are the people who want fiat currency and fractional reserve banking and other things, they want you to believe that money can be a store of value. Yes, I disagree with that conceptually. I don't believe it's truly a store of value. And we will explore that as we go on.
Yeah, good. We're coming up on our first hard break. And folks, I really think you got to just hang in there on these conversations, because they really are important. And again, I want to draw your attention back to this headline article on Business Insider. And I want to read the opening paragraph: fridges zapped off in kitchens across Venezuela as the government turned off the electricity supply to help ease a power shortage that is worsening. Now, the article doesn't tell you that the government created all these problems, and part of it's related to how they manage their economy. Part of it is related to the very discussion we have. We have an idea that currency or a medium of exchange can only occur with the help of the government. And I think it's time for us to liberate our thinking from that. I think it's part of this whole idea of secession, if you will, seceding, withdrawing your consent, withdrawing from something. Well, we've been raised on this diet of the dollar is all important in our lives. And as Scott is going to get into in the next segment, we're going to see how that directly affects us, because it does. It has a profound effect on our lives. And don't think that there couldn't be a time at some point in the future where the headline does read, fridges zapped off in kitchens across these United States as the government turned off the electricity supply. We look at Venezuela and we think, wow, that's really bad. That's what's happening to them down there. But sometimes we fail to realize that when government controls all of these areas of the economy, when it manages it through currency, through money supply, through fiat currency, things we'll talk about after this break. You also can realize that any government can actually do this to the people. And so it's just another reason for us here on the Mark Kreslin Show and here on the Veritas Radio Network to rethink the American Union for the 21st century, as our good friend Professor Don Livingston titled a book he edited. It's why it's important to think past the status quo. Granted, economics, money, fiat supply, terms like tradable wealth, unit of account, this idea of medium of exchange, that the dollar is a store of value. Yes, these are harder concepts for us to talk about versus some of the concepts we talk about routinely on the show here about just getting away from the tyranny in Washington, D.C. But you've got to understand that if we do get away, there's still going to need to be some medium of exchange. There's going to need to be a storage of value. There's going to need to be the ability to trade our wealth. And I'm hoping that if a time occurs where some states are actually pulling away from the union, and as we think about how we're going to conduct business, that this becomes an important part of that discussion on how trade will happen. It doesn't have to happen through the U.S. dollar. And that's going to be a big shocker as we get into that part of this discussion. We've just been trained, folks. We've been trained to think this is the only way to do it, just like we've been trained the only way to fix Washington, D.C. is voting, hoping, and coping. Don't underestimate the power of propaganda in your life and how it's affected how you think about these very important topics. And this, albeit more complicated, is in some cases perhaps more essential than even other conversations we're having. So we'll be right back after these this short break. We want to thank those who participate and regularly sponsor our radio network, like Bulldog Kia, McClure Block Company, and Buck Steel. By the way, I want to say hi to everybody up at the 18th Avenue Bakery up in Brooklyn, New York, part of the Crusader Cafe program. Hope you all are having a good day. Folks, stay tuned. You're listening to the Mark Kreslin Show. We'll be right back after these short messages.